Well, guess what we'll be talking about with Open Lines next hour as we talk about the strange, the unusual, the peculiar, the bizarre. Nicholas Villard is with us, his book, A People's History of the Peculiar. And we'll be back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Nicholas Villard is with us. Nicholas, Helltown, USA in Ohio, supposed to be a place that was loaded with hauntings and Satanists. It's in the book. What can you tell us about it?
Well, you know, have you ever heard of Helltown? I don't think a lot of people have.
Yeah, I did, but that's me, right?
Well, I actually visited Helltown, and I was out there for a couple of summers, actually. And the more I hung around there, the more I started learning about some of the mysteries of this area, which is in northeastern Ohio, very close to, well, it's actually part of what's called Boston Township, very close to Peninsula, Ohio, which is about, I'm guessing, 30 miles south of Cleveland or something along those lines.
They used to call it Boston, Ohio, right?
I think they did. And it's a very surreal little town. Even though people, like some of the people I know there, would play tricks on the out-of-towners who knew about the urban legends. Besides that, there's still something about Boston Township. There was a chemical spill there. There were lots of mills and so forth around there over the years. The Ohio Erie Canal, the ruins of it cut right through Boston Township. And so there's a lot of rumors about this chemical spill that once happened there. People seeing barrels stacked, people getting sick. In fact, I even met one man who had very strange muscle tremors, and he wasn't the only one who had this in the area. But it goes beyond that. People had these rumors of toxic mutants. Now, I don't know how detailed that part actually gets, but there are also rumors of Satanists who are meeting and torturing and killing animals. And regardless of some of that, I can't prove whether the Satanists are there or not. I only know the people who I talk to. But there is also one thing that's very interesting about Helltown, USA, that doesn't deserve the moniker of Helltown, but is very strange, are all the Indian mounds in the area, as well as some of them that are secretly hidden in people's backyards and portions of forest. The Indian mounds in North America are dwindling, and you know, so many have been eradicated.
Oh yeah.
But there's one in particular. There's a cemetery in Boston Township, and that cemetery is built on top of an Indian mound. And there's people in that area who believe that particular Indian mound is extremely sacred. People will break into the Indian mound. They will hold ceremonies there. I met one woman who she would actually break into the cemetery and go there with her horse and ride it around because she wanted to get the energy from that particular area. It's very bizarre. It's interesting when you go to different places in America and the people you meet and the stories they know about their area and the urban legends that they know and the things that they believe in, that they wholeheartedly believe in. I'm just absolutely fascinated by it, and I was absolutely fascinated by Helltown, USA. I think the more that people explore Helltown, the more they're going to find out, and of course some of the myths will be disproved and whatnot. There was also a rumor of a giant snake there, 1940s.
How big?
A python. And of course, if you have rumors of a python, the rumors are going to grow even larger, and being that it's in the woods, and that whole area is wooded, that particular urban legend is going to get crazy over time. And the people who recall seeing the python, now this is back in the 1940s.
Or even anaconda's a big snake too, right?
Oh, yeah. And they recall a circus train passing through town in the 1940s, and I believe people just thought, well, this giant snake got away from the circus train. Like, that's the logical guess. Regardless, people wholeheartedly believe that this snake was tormenting their town. In fact, they even have, I don't know if they still do it this year, but for many years there, they were holding a snake festival. I've been into the Peninsula Library where there's a mosaic built in the shape of a snake. People love their snake legend in Peninsula, which I consider part of Helltown.
Tell me about this bizarre, then we'll get to these calls here that are lining up for you, Nicholas. Tell me about this bizarre series of stories surrounding, of course, Mothman.
Oh, boy. Now we're opening a can of worms, right? Uh-huh. Well, you know, there's something interesting with this particular book, too. People's History is Peculiar, because this book is connected to my publisher, who's connected to Mothman. I interview her as part of this story. She grew up in Clendenin, West Virginia. She was a child there in the 1960s, and of course, you know, that 1966 is, I believe, that's the year of the first sighting of Mothman at the TNT factory. I don't believe it's there anymore.
There are no factories there anywhere anymore.
And well, what's interesting is the person who I interviewed, her parents used to work dealing with all the plutonium and the storage of it.
Oh,
and, you know, here's a child of these folks, and it's somebody in her family who was in the car that when they were at the TNT factory when Mothman appeared, and of course he's this, you know, winged man or creature, possibly an interdimensional creature. There's all kinds of explanations. Who's 7 feet tall, who can fly and chase their car. And there's news stories that corroborate that something did happen that night at the TNT factory. And so People's History is Peculiar. I don't just talk about that, but I talk about more of the legend. I even take it back to a Chief Cornstalk who 200 years before may have cursed the land, who around the time just before the American Revolution. And so I really, we were talking earlier about explaining history and can history be the supernatural? And because I think there is a historical record of Mothman, well, why can't he be part of history, right? You know, he's somebody, or it is something we need to talk about. Whether Mothman is a Native American spirit or something else completely, or just a figment of everybody's imaginations, we need to talk about this kind of thing. And so that's where I feel completely comfortable. It's a book of bizarre facts, so why not talk about Mothman? And it's a very strange story. It's a very creepy. It gets very detailed. And of course, we could use up the next hour and the next day of your show talking about Mothman and all the intricacies of what he may represent to tragedy in America.
And the film, didn't a lot of people who were associated with the film die or something like that?
There were people who were associated with the film who died. And, you know, I don't have that list in front of me of all the people who died related to the film, but that's one of the most interesting aspects of Mothman is that he appears during tragedy. And I talked to a man who claimed he was the Mothman photographer, who says he took a picture. I don't know, maybe you've interviewed him for the show in the past, and I can't remember his name, but he's known as the Mothman photographer. And he was hunting Mothman at the time when I talked to him over the phone. He said he was trying to hunt him down in some forest area, and he told some very strange stories of people he was talking to who had very personal experiences with Mothman, where Mothman would literally appear inside of their house. And I'd met people on social media who knew personal stories about Mothman, and most of them wouldn't even talk about them. And sometimes you meet people and you can tell they just want to create a story.
Right.
But when you meet somebody who says, yeah, I know about Mothman, so-and-so in my family knows all about it and has had a personal experience, and when that person won't talk because they're either terrified or they're just afraid of what society is going to think about them, then you start to feel like, well, maybe there's something here. And I think that's why I included Mothman in the book, because there is something there. There is a part of America in this particular urban legend. And I think, and I just want to say this to the listeners, that your areas have urban legends too, and you should explore them, and you should see what kind of validity they have, because a lot of people won't. A lot of people just want to talk around the water cooler and say, yeah, there's this urban legend. But do people actually go the extra mile and research and try to find out and try to record something about their urban legend?
Because they're all over the country, Nicholas, these legends.
You know, yeah, and I mentioned my novel, Lords Part One. That's part of an urban legend. It may be a novel. It's a fictitious account of an urban legend where I actually did interview people, where I crept around murder sites. There's ghost stories in it. There were stories that, even though the book is set in the late 1970s, there are stories that people told me in the 2000s that I thought they're too important not to include in this novel. I have to still put them in there. So I think people really need to explore their own areas, and especially urban legends. I mean, we've got historians all over the place, and sometimes local areas need their historians of their economics and society and politics too. But sometimes the more adventurous stories are the urban legends, and they're an awful lot of fun to write about.
All right, let's go to the phones for you. We go to Kay, first of all, east of the Rockies and Fremont, Ohio. Kay, thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Hi. How you doing?
Good.
There's this man that works at a discount store, and he was telling me that he loves his wife so much and that she's been gone for quite a few years, and he talks to her all the time. And things were flying around his house off his coffee table and hit him in the head. He was telling about one day he got out of bed, and there was two great big files, like, up on top of a dresser or something, and it fell on the floor, and I guess it was like kind of an upside-down cross. I says, that's not your wife. I think he's entertaining evil spirit or something.
They're everywhere.
But anyway, that day, that very same day, he said it was a warning from his wife. He said at a crossroad, he was hit by a car real hard, and he went flying into a telephone post or something.
That kill him?
No, but he was in intensive care for like 2 or 3 months. And the doctor, when he came out of it, the doctor says, there's no way. He says, it's a miracle. There's no way that you could have lived. And he claims that his wife saved his life. And I think, you're thanking the wrong person. You should be thanking the Lord.
Well, that's true. Do you know, you probably could write another book, Nicholas, just based on people and the bizarre things they come across.
You know, there's a young man in here in Bakersfield, California. I won't say his name just because I'm throwing this story out there. He's somebody who's connected to my family, and he was riding his bike not too long ago, and he's in his 20s, and he gets hit by a car. I believe the car was going between 50 and 60 miles an hour, and the car was at fault. And if you can imagine getting hit on a bicycle by a car going that fast, and he wasn't even in the hospital but I think a month or two, and I saw this kid recently. He didn't look like he had any problem with him. How do we explain that? I've known people who were bodybuilders who would ride their bikes across America who've been hit by cars going the same speed and instantly killed. How do we explain these kinds of incidents? I totally agree, George. There could be a whole book about just people.
No question about it. And people are fascinated with this. I'm going to open up my open lines next hour. You can listen in, Nicholas, from wherever you are, and see how many more bizarre stories we get. Let's go next to Dean in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, on the wild card line. Hey, Dean, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, George.
Hey,
nice
Dean.
To talk to you.
You too, sir.
Been listening to you for about 15 years.
Thank you. All of us. Good.
Okay. What I wanted to tell you about, there were two girls from Beresford, South Dakota, that disappeared in 1971. They were driving a 62 Studebaker. And they were on their way to a party. It was the end of the school year, and they were sophomores, and they were going to go out to this gravel pit to meet these other students. And nobody ever saw him again. Well, you flash up to 42 years later, 2013, one of the girl's fathers passed away, and I think it was October, and three days, maybe four at the most, all of a sudden, they found these girls. Now, how could you ever imagine they're being missing for 42 years? One of the fathers dies in 2013, and then they find them.
That's a good question, too.
Well, what the deal was is the car was in a little bridge there, not too far from between the house and the gravel pit, and people were hunting and fishing that pond for 42 years, and then all of a sudden, 3 or 4 days after one of the girl's fathers dies, these four wheels of this Studebaker pop up. And then they pull this car out of it. I just can't imagine that's a coincidence that after 42 years and one father dying, they couldn't find anything trace of the girls, and then that car just pops up out of the
It's
water.
Fate. It's fate. There are no coincidences at all. Nicholas, have you found that too in some of the things you've researched?
You know, we were talking about Mothman just a minute ago, and I was thinking about the Silver Bridge when it collapsed, and I think 46 people died when the Silver Bridge collapsed, and I can't remember exactly what year that was, 1960s, after the first sighting of Mothman, and some people say Mothman appeared to a lot of people around the time of the Silver Bridge collapse. But I remember a story of a pregnant woman who was one of the next cars in line to cross the Silver Bridge, and when it's kind of like an eye bolt or something on the bridge, when it snapped and the bridge collapsed, her car almost fell in. It didn't fall in, but it almost fell in. Now that's it's fate that maybe that people, the 46 people passed, including this one man's friend who was a taxi driver, and the taxi driver died. But what about the woman, the pregnant woman, the child in the pregnant woman? And not only that, but the woman who I interviewed, who's connected to the book, she was 6 years old in a car, maybe behind that car. It was very close to getting onto the Silver Bridge. And she remembers her mother just panicking, and she didn't know what it was all about.
Oh.
And the pregnant woman got rescued too. Somebody else that, in fact, there was a panel not too long ago, and the man who rescued her talked about it, and she was there too, and she talked about how for 40 years she did not want to be on a bridge.
No, I don't blame her at all. We're going to come back with final calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, I invite you all to take a look at our television program Beyond Belief, because truly it is Beyond Belief. It's free for 10 days. You can watch not only that show, but all the other videos supplied by that network. So simply go to beyondbelief.com, www.beyondbelief.com. Nicholas, what can you tell us about the lost colony in Roanoke, Virginia?
The lost colony of Roanoke is one of those tales of history where we think, oh, well, they were there, they're gone. You know, people don't think much of them. But I remember when I was digging into the archives, I kept coming across bits of information that weren't in any of the history textbooks I was reading. And one of the things I found fascinating by it is, well, we know that this colony was dropped off, and it was around 1586, somewhere around there.
Wow.
And they were left for a few years, I believe, 3 years, and they weren't supposed to be left for 3 years because there were certain factors that came up that had to do with, I think, everything from storms to pirates.
They didn't even have provisions for 3 years.
No, and they were. And here's one of the interesting things that's been discovered is that the worst drought ever in that area was during the 3 years they were there. So they may have gone in search of food and water, but there are other mysteries too. So for instance, when you look into the historical record, when Captain John Smith, John White, excuse me, John Smith's another guy, we know who he is. Captain John White, when he comes back and he finally brings provisions and he brings men, and some of his own men drown just trying to get to Roanoke, and he sees smoke. Now, if the colony is completely missing, why is he seeing smoke? Why is there a sighting of smoke in the historical record, which I think is fascinating? Why are there footprints found? Of course, we know that there's the carving, somebody carved Croatoan, which is now Hatteras Island. If you've ever been to the town of Buxton or seen the big Hatteras lighthouse or pictures of it, that's Hatteras. That's Croatoan where that was what was carved. Maybe they went to Croatoan. Nobody was found. Now, their boats were all missing. It looked like their houses had been taken apart. It didn't look like they'd left in a haste. Jeez.
Were they attacked?
Well, there'd been violent natives in the area, sightings of natives with who'd actually built pikes around where their village where they lived, which tells me that if you're setting up a defensive perimeter, then you're expecting to be attacked. There was a colony before the missing colony that was in the same area. They'd been attacked once. So that could be it. But the mystery goes deeper than that. The mystery goes to, there's been rumors of natives with gray eyes and blonde hair. There were rumors of two-story houses built in the woods that had nothing to do with Jamestown. And there's also was a map that had to do with somebody from Jamestown met four men who said that they originally were from Roanoke. Now, why would people even say that? Why would you say you're from Roanoke unless you were from there? Yet those men were never heard from again, or at least the historical record says nothing about that. There's also another interesting phenomenon about Roanoke that has to do with, now I mentioned Captain John White, he returns hopefully to find these colonists. Mm-hmm. What the historical record usually doesn't reveal, or at least in textbooks, is that he forced his own daughter and granddaughter to stay on the island. And his granddaughter, Virginia Dare, was born on the island and was actually the first person in the Americas born of British parents. So Virginia Dare, this little girl, she has historical prominence, even though we never hear from her again. We never see her again. But if you start Googling Virginia Dare, you'll start finding some really interesting things. You'll find supernatural phenomena related to Virginia Dare. You'll find she's been written about in fiction, including Neil Gaiman wrote about her in comic books. She's been written about in other fiction where she even has supernatural powers. So this little girl, this little baby who would have been 3 years old when John White returned, or around that age, and who's never seen from again, has made it into American pop culture and will really live forever. And there were rumors that she may have been spotted, too, as a young girl in a tribe.
With a tribe, yeah.
Yeah, so these are some of the things that you're not going to find in a historical text, but if you dig into the record or if you pick up a book like People's History of the Peculiar, you're going to find some of these interesting details that's what I want to illuminate, some of the facts that you're just not going to find necessarily in a textbook.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. John in Tacoma, Washington on the Wildcard line. Hey, John, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hi, George, you have a really good show. I love your show to death.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about the world's scariest drug, scopolamine. It's derived from a plant called Columbia's Devil Breath. Now, they use it, and what it does is it makes people highly vulnerable to suggestion. Huh. And then when they wake up, they don't remember anything. So the criminals down in Columbia, they get the seed. And then there's a lot of the drug in the seed. It only takes like 1 to 3 milligrams worth of the drug to put somebody under its trance. It's a hypnotic drug also. Jeez,
like a zombie? They turn them into zombies?
Exactly. That people give up their ATM cards. Hand money out of their wallets, and they have no control over what they're doing. But there's in the early 1900s, they used it for birthing women, and women would have babies without even realizing it. And then they used it. With Dr. Mengele, the Nazi doctor. He used it for enhanced interrogations. And then during the 60s, they used it for MK Ultra. The CIA did. And it's a strange drug. And I believe the CIA has, you know, taken scopolamine and maybe mixed a few other drugs with it to create the perfect super soldier.
Oh my gosh, it's a monster drug, huh?
Yeah, it's like many times more potent than Rohypnol. They use it for rape, torture. I've heard even on the internet that they've used it on the U.S. Embassy people.
Gosh, I've never heard of that. Let me ask you this, Nicholas, in your research, did you come across any bizarre potions or anything like that?
You know, what popped into my head was in the book I talked, you know, we're talking about the influence of drugs here. What about the influence of something like art, where some people react to art in such a way that they have to be hospitalized?
What do you mean? What happens?
That some people can view a famous work of art, like the Statue of David, and have such, maybe it's such a reverence for it. Maybe they've
it's an emotional high or something.
Emotional reaction to the point where they're hospitalized, where they just start acting bizarre. There's a percentage of Japanese women who go to Paris who react to Paris and have to be hospitalized. It's, you know, and I'm just thinking of how something different than drugs can influence people to cause a strange reaction, strange emotional reactions. Something else I talk about in the book is Jerusalem syndrome. People who go to Jerusalem, and maybe they're mentally ill, maybe they're not, George, but I think it was between 1982 and 1993, something like 1,200 people had to be or either arrested or hospitalized because of their reaction to Jerusalem. Maybe somebody who worked out a lot and suddenly they think they're Samson and they're going to go move stones on the Wailing Wall or something, you know, where people just having a bizarre emotional reaction. They think they're a holy figure. And it could just be triggered by stepping off of a plane in Jerusalem. And it's interesting how places, how art, how objects can influence people, and it doesn't even have to be a drug.
I never heard of that. I mean, I know people have been emotional when they see things. You hear music, they get emotional and stuff like that. But, man, that's the first I heard it when you look at artwork. Let's go to Marty in Seattle, west of the Rockies. Hello, Marty. Go ahead.
Hey, I wanted to touch base. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I listen to your show a lot.
Well, thank you.
And anyway, I happen to be a redhead, and I have always, ever since I heard about, you know, you and your guests were talking about, you know, the burning people at the witch, you know, burning witches. They weren't really, or you didn't really say that they're redheads, but I always heard always assumed that redheads were witches. And I was always really concerned about that. And I just wanted to get.
Have people called you a witch, Marty?
No, but I do have some psychic powers. But you know, I'm not really a witch, but.
I always thought witches had dark hair. Nicholas, didn't you?
I think they can come in any hair color.
Probably. Probably. But this is the first I heard of witches having, like, red hair. singled out.
You know, one of the things about the Salem witch trials and about that time period is if you were different from everybody else, if you acted different, if you looked different, then, you know, during a hysteria, during an episode where people are accusing each other, who are they going to point fingers at? There were, I believe, 19 women hanged. It'd be really interesting to see what their hair color was. Now I'm interested to see if I can figure that out.
Yeah, now you have to figure that out and go check it out for us.
And one man was pressed to death, too, which that is not a good way to go, George.
What do you mean pressed to death? Like in a grape presser?
No. Being pressed to death means you're tied to the ground and heavy objects are placed upon your chest.
Ah, like,
and you don't die right away. This takes place over possibly days, and you're able to eat a little bit. They'll give you water, but they increase the pressure. They add more stones. Yeah, and so it's not a good way to go. That's how one of the people went during the Salem witch trial.
I would assume you suffocate that way, right?
Yes, I you know, suffocate, and if you live for days, I'm assuming your organs are shutting down too after a while.
What a horrible way to die. What's wrong with these people?
Thank goodness it didn't keep happening in America over and over again like it did in Europe, these sort of waves of witch trials.
And you came across stories of sacrifices, for example, where in Central America they would rip out your heart and eat it and stuff like that?
Yes, I have a little bit of that in the book, but not very much of that. I talk more about a little bit about 2012 and the myths surrounding that. But really, when I talk about the rituals, I stick to the Cannibal Islands, to the Fijian Islands.
Don't blame you. Stu is in Phoenix, Arizona. We'll be out that way tomorrow. Stu, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, you mentioned Helltown, USA a little while ago.
Yep.
Now, I grew up in Akron. In fact, I lived there till 1990. I spent a lot of time in Boston Township, but I've never heard the term Helltown, USA.
Oh, yeah.
But I do know that a friend of mine was chased through there one night by a driverless car, and that car vanished into thin air.
Huh. Part of the myth, part of the story. Yeah, it's real. That's what they call it. Helltown, USA. It's in Ohio. Used to be called Brown, Ohio. Strange. A car that disappears, Nicholas.
There are strange names for roads, strange nicknames, like the road at the end of the world. There was a lot of talk about an abandoned school bus and what it might have been used for that was around Boston Township. And I'm curious if your caller knows about that school bus. I've never been able to, when I was there, I was never able to find where it was. I never saw any pictures of it. But there was a lot of talk about this school bus, and I wondered if it had some kind of supernatural story like this driverless car.
Do you find that every major city has some kind of bizarre, peculiar type myth story?
I think so. Everywhere that I've lived has. And like I said, I lived in Las Vegas for a few years, and I think that the mole people and the actual documentation of the mole people, and I know we've talked about this already, but to me, that is one of the most fascinating stories. And once again, back to the Lords of Bakersfield, this urban myth, that these lawmakers and judges and professors were leading these hidden lives and murdering people and getting away with it and implicating the publisher of their own newspaper and these stories. There was so much talk, not just around water coolers, but around people who I knew who were part of these stories that I just felt I finally had to write about it. And I hope that, like I said, if people dig into the stories, maybe there's some writers out there, George, who are like me.
What's your favorite part of the book? Anything?
I would have to say, based on what we talked about tonight, Christopher Columbus is one of the most fascinating topics that we could talk about. I really could talk about him even longer. With some more mysteries surrounding Christopher Columbus, the story of the unknown pilot, where he may have gotten his secret information, for where he was traveling. There are just so many stories surrounding Christopher Columbus. Mothman, you can dig deeper and deeper into Mothman. And as well as one of the topics that we didn't talk about, which has to do with why our capital is in Washington, D.C. and not Philadelphia, when Philadelphia was the city of enlightenment. It was the most, possibly the most enlightened city in the Western world.
Well, it started as Philadelphia, didn't it, for a little bit?
It did. It started as Philadelphia, and then I actually have some theories that I'm talking about biohistory, getting into disease again. There were waves of yellow fever that struck Philadelphia in the early 1790s that decimated. I mean, if you can imagine a third or more of a city being wiped out from a disease nowadays.
Remember the old bubonic plague from a long time ago as well. Nicholas, thanks for being on the program. A People's History of the Peculiar. We're going to continue with the theme, open lines and bizarre stories, next on Coast to Coast AM.